Blog Talk Radio.
As the tears are falling from my face, with all my fears I long for your embrace. How am I gonna carry on and be the one you lead it on when I'm falling down? Now the tears are falling from your face. I never learned from all of my mistakes. How we gonna carry on? Can anybody be this strong when we're falling down right now?
Solemn prayer, God.
America, this land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountains to the prairies to the ocean, white with fire.
Okay, folks, welcome to Continue Mission. I'm your host, James McCormick, and tonight we're going to talk about the Rough Riders. And we're going to talk about a book that was written by Mr. Richard Kilblaine, who has also been my co-host and one of my best friends for many, many years. 66 years old, still out doing martial arts. I really hope that I will grow up to be like him one day. Of course, we have Father Michael Pacella on here as well. And we're going to have a little bit of a dig into current events, because I have another radio show that I do during the week, and it's only 30 minutes long, but it reaches a large, large audience, about 3 million. It's huge, you know, which on here we hit about 135 to 140,000 through the week, which is really good. I mean, it's cool, and we really appreciate all you listeners out there, those that listen now and those that will listen later on, you know, as you do the replay of this. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for those that share it as well and those that contribute. The show today, earlier today I had, and it's Vets for Vet Leadership. It's on America Matters Media, which if you go, you Google America Matters Media, they're huge. They're, we play on the radio in California and Nevada and some parts of Washington State and just a whole lot of area out west, Midwest. And far west. So we get a lot of feedback from that radio show. And today's radio show, which I loaded it on my Facebook page, which is just under James McCormick. Some of you all have it. You can go there and you can look at the radio show today. Now, I was a little hard on the ruling party today, which is the Democrat Party. I was very hard on them, and I intend to continue to be hard on them. Not just because, I'm this red-hot Republican, because I am a registered independent, okay? But it's because they are the ones in charge now. And it's just like when we had all of the issues, you know, with the January 6th and you know, all of the violence and the vile nonsense that went on across the country. You know, we have to hold these politicians and especially these parties accountable. And, you know, we held everybody accountable. But I'm not seeing the same effort to hold people accountable that are breaking the law in the name of President Joe Biden or, you know, the ultra-liberal Democrat Party. I'm not seeing that pointing for me to not see a level of fairness. I cannot stand when you do not have a level of fairness. When you don't have fairness, liberty is in jeopardy. When you do not have fairness, remember this, folks, liberty is in jeopardy. So essentially, when you turn a blind eye to this criminal mischief that's going on right now, and it's terrible. I mean, people are being murdered, and the murderers are being let out literally before they can get the body to the morgue or have the body even autopsied. I mean, that's just a fact. They're getting out on $50,000 bonds for murder. And I'm going to read you one such case, and it really is upsetting. And we're going to be professional about it, but we are going to be vocal about this. And if you're not and you're covering up, then you're wrong. So if you're a Democrat and a liberal and a socialist and all these other things, number one, I doubt that you're going to be listening to this show. But if you are, you know what I mean? If you're a rock solid, hardcore socialist, communist, whatever you want to call yourself, okay, that's your right to feel that way. But it's not the way that it falls in line with the United States Constitution. Okay? And we see the effort to get that, to get the Constitution changed. This is why I tell people to be very careful when you do a when you set it up for an opening of the Constitution, and I've seen people call for this, and I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's like a referendum for states, or, you know, to all come together. If all the states agree, then they can go in and they can change the U.S. Constitution. And there's a very real effort by a lot of people who claim and call themselves, you know, staunch conservative people. But you really got to be careful. When you open that thing up, you open Pandora's box for changes that you may not want. Just remember who's in charge now. You really, really want that. The thing that I want to talk about today is an incident that happened in North Dakota. Teenager. Turn some lights on here, folks. Okay. A teenager in North Dakota, 18 years old. He's a kid. Okay. Got into an argument. 41-year-old man. The 41-year-old man is a well-known staunch liberal. He has several different sites on Twitter. I'm sure he's probably cussed me out a few times. Constantly badgering, you know, blaming Donald Trump for everything from Y2K to slavery. You know, I mean, he blames Trump, anybody that's a Republican. But ironically, this so-called staunch liberal fruitcake was driving around in an SUV. Now, this is a guy that supposedly is part of the party that says, you know, save our planet, drive an electric car, ride a bicycle. I wish that he was riding a bicycle, because then he couldn't have done the atrocious, horrific act of murder that he did against this 18-year-old boy who happened to be a conservative. The driver, let's just not even mention him, her, shim, I don't know, you know, because everybody wants a pronoun. But he goes, they said it to him, goes by the name Shannon Brandt. Drove his SUV and crushed Kyler, C-A-Y-L-E-R, Ellingson, early Sunday because the teenager was threatening him. And that the teen was part of a Republican extremist group, according to the probable cause affidavit filed by this so-called liberal, who obviously is the biggest hypocrite in the world, driving an SUV, the biggest gas goblin vehicle you can get, blowing out CO2 emissions all over the place. Kamala going to think of you. But they don't say anything. You don't see this on national television. This happened this week. Now, once they finally got a hold of him, you know, a while after he killed the boy, he was still so drunk, that he still blew beyond the legal limit. You're going to love this. He was charged with vehicular homicide. He might go to jail for 5 years, maybe. And they let him out on a $50,000 bond. The kid was not even cold in the morgue. And Mr. Brandt in North Dakota got out of jail and was home with his family, laughing, joking, probably nursing a hangover, Fox News is the only group that carried this. CNN, MSNBC, you know, all these so-called liberal, love stations. They love. They're all about love and fairness. You know, they want to build a gold statue for George Floyd, a criminal. And I hate it that he was killed. You shouldn't kill anybody. But in comparison to George Floyd's million-dollar funeral, millions went to his family. The cops went to jail, as they should have. You see, that's the difference between real Americans and these phony, sick socialists. You see, we believe in holding people accountable. A guy called me today and said, hey, one of those guys that rioted in the Capitol, he got charged today. I said, well, good, because he was breaking the law. And if you broke the law, you go to jail. And they've kept him in jail. Now, he didn't kill anybody. But he couldn't get out on a personal bond for $50,000. No, he's been in jail since they arrested him last January. Okay? And now he's going to be in jail for however long, 3, 5, 10 years, which he should go to jail. But do you not see the ignorance of this? Do you not see the unfairness of it? Now, if you're a liberal, socialist, communist, and you're all about, you know, being able to, you know, do whatever, say whatever, as long as you're a liberal, socialist, communist, a bigot, then, you know, you can get away with that. You can do anything you want. They burned down Portland. They destroyed Washington, D.C. almost after Donald Trump won the election. 2016, go do some research. How many of those people have been incarcerated the whole time? Son, Black Lives Matter would burn another city down if you try to do that. They stopped traffic. They stopped traffic and a guy died, a 40-some-year-old man died who was trying to get to the hospital. Father of 3 or 4 was having a massive heart attack. Couldn't get through because BLM, Antifa, Queers United, the gay and lesbian, what do they call that other one? Queer, I can't remember the name, whatever it is. They were all together, all after holding hands in the street, tearing stuff up, burning down cities, stopping an ambulance. Guy died. They cheered. They said, hallelujah. Was he white? Was he a Trump supporter? That was what was said. People were heard saying that. No. No, he wasn't any of those things. He was just a father and a husband to a woman. That probably upset some people too. So I'm frustrated about this. They killed this boy in North Dakota, and this guy's walking basically scot-free. No respect, no decency, no nothing. Crime is on the uptick, folks. It's terrible. All are horrible. Horrible. We're going to be talking about the Rough Riders. I pray to God Almighty that God will send us a bunch of Rough Riders in here and help us clean this damn mess up in this country, because it's unbelievable what's going on. Literally, it spreads everywhere. Even in my little town, the little town I work in Point Pleasant, standing out there on the street with an elderly gentleman, 98 years old, World War II veteran, showing him some things, and another gentleman was sitting there, and some idiots drive down the road in a red car with a young guy, about 20-some years old, big rainbow flag on his antenna, rainbow sticker. I got a picture of his car, so I'm not lying, I'm not exaggerating. Gets out of the window, both middle fingers in the air. F you, F you, F you. To everybody. You go catch up with them, you take a picture, They run from you. They'll never stop and do that. I'm just telling you, unless they got a gang of about 100 to 1. Turn a picture of the car. You turn in a police report. Do the things you're supposed to do. And you know what happens? You, the citizen, gets told, just ignore it. They're just being stupid. No, they're being criminals. And they're being disrespectful. And the next time, I'm going to reach out there and grab a hold of him, and I'm going to yank his ass out of that car while he's going down the road. And then we'll see what happens then. How about that? Well, then, you know, you'll probably get arrested. You see what I'm saying, folks? Do you see where we've went so far to the left? We started to drift too far to the right. Now we're to the left. We're so far out left field, son, you can't even see decency anymore. And it's a shame. The Republicans came out with a plan. I know some people are upset about it. Especially Nancy Pelosi. And Nancy Pelosi put out a big report today, said, Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is pulling a political stunt by talking about a commitment to America. It's a plan, see? Let's talk about this plan about commitment to America that every Democrat in the House and the Senate is condemning as racist, bigoted, fascist, you know, all the words they like to throw on you. They're all saying that right now. But if you really lay it down, here's what it lays out. The agenda includes policies to combat inflation. Well, of course. That generally means combat inflation, generally means a tax break to you and me, the citizen. You know, like maybe our military retirement pay, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't tax that anywhere. Yeah, boy, you talk around that about that in some circles, they want to hang you. They want to build the gallows and hang you right there because how dare you be so un-American that you don't want to pay your fair share of taxes. I'll pay my fair share of taxes, but I just think, and some people think, that we need to not pay as much taxes. So combat inflation. Combat inflation also means, okay, increasing American ingenuity and empowering our American corporations to hire more people. You know, so that we're not giving everything to Hunter Biden's friends in the Chinese corporations that he works for, that everybody defends. Let me tell you something. They're defending that. Smoking a crack pipe, all them videos. We've seen them, folks. Look at all the videos that's out there. She's so foul. Nasty, 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 nasty. Nasty. Just like that song. Nasty. And they say, oh, well, he was just messing around. It's okay. It's okay. But, oh, my goodness, Kevin McCarthy, you're talking about this right here. You are a fascist. If you want to reduce taxes, combat inflation, and then here's the big one, illegal immigration. How dare you, you bigot, you racist, you fascist. How dare you want to protect the borders of this country? How do you think that we're going to be able to stay in office? These are our future voters that we're trying to get in here, folks. These nonsensical things that have occurred are off the chain. As wrong as can be. And by the way, two men cannot physically produce a baby. I'm sorry. Can two women? You have to take one of each to make that happen. Now, they talked a little bit about that. That tore him up, too. Then he says, well, we want to only allow biological women to participate in women's sports. Hey, how about that? That's called fairness. All you women that have been fighting for women's rights to get your own thing, why would you want to share that space with a man now? And whether let me tell you something. Until you get it all whacked off until you get it all changed out, you are still a man, period. You're a biological man. It's just the way it is. Whether you want me to call you this, that, or the other thing, I will be respectful to everybody. But when you get up in my face and you try to force me to say it's okay, then that's when you're going to get your feelings hurt, because then that's when I'm going to tell you the truth. It's not okay. It's foul. It's obnoxious. But I'm not going to go around making big signs. And this is where I'm telling all you conservative people out there, don't waste your time on riots and acting like these liberals do. Instead of running your mouth on TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, you can do a little bit of that from time to time, just to level out. Instead of that, why don't you get out there and organize in your communities and show people why they should be voting for the conservative candidates? Don't just sit around there and talk about it. You know, it's like if we spent more time, people talked about, us being a Christian nation and Christian faith and all these things. If we spent more time just showing people, then we wouldn't have to tell anybody that you was a Christian. So I love you. You're wrong, too, in some of your cases, okay? We have got to get away from this this social media bashing, crashing, and spending all our time up all night worrying about what's been posted on Twitter. I could care less what you post about me on Twitter. You want to know why? Because I got an attorney. And if you create, and you act in a way that is considered slanderous or libelous, ask some of the people that have done it to me before. You're going to get a letter from my attorney, and then we're going to talk settlement real quick. And you know what they do? They stroke a check every time, because they know you will sue them. They know you will sue them, and they know that you will put them in a bind. And you know what? That's what they deserve if they're breaking the law and they're committing acts of slander, libel, and all of these other things. So don't put up with that stuff. Go get an attorney. It's easy. Just go get a Legal Shield program, friends. It's about $51, $60 a month, whatever it is. It's worth it, every penny. Because then I've got an attorney. I was just talking to my attorney today. He's going to help me write a letter so I can get some state legislation passed in here. Isn't that great? I got an attorney on retainer, baby. It's great. Somebody posts something, puts a lie up, does something stupid. Now, you may not get it taken down, but you can sure be sure that they're going to write and they're going to say, I'm sorry. You know, but when it's in there on the internet, it's there forever. But then every time you see it, you get your attorney back on the and write that letter again. You see, that's how legal, civil people handle things. We'll try to do it civilly. We'll talk to you, try to get you to change, ask you please, nicely. But if that don't work, then you always have that route. There's been a politician, or no, there was a newspaper reporter in Nevada that's going to report a damaging story about a Democrat. And this Democrat, who was just a fabulous socialist, he looked like a skinhead. He had his head shaved. So I don't know. Maybe he's really, really taken on that National Socialist Party image now. Yeah, that's what the Nazis were, right? They were the National Socialist Party, okay? And people talk about being National Socialists. What are you saying? Hitler? That's what Hitler was. Supposed to be the party for the people, right? Not all Democrats are bad. I know some good Democrats, some fine ones, that work every day and can't stand this nonsense either. But they won't change their party affiliation because their mothers, their grandmothers, their grandfathers, their fathers, they've all been Democrats. And they're good, hard union workers. And there's a lot of them out there. And God bless you for it. And I hope that you are successful in turning the tide in this nonsense, because I know it's embarrassing for you because you've told me many times. They're embarrassed by it. Over the hostile takeover by people like Ilhan Omar. You know, not even sure she's even supposed to be in the country. But I'm not a conspiracy theorist. Let's check the paperwork. If she's okay, then fine, shut up, never talk about it again. But if she's not, then you need to boot her butt out of here along with whoever else she's drug in here. We used to call it skull dragging people. That's a term that we used in the Army. When you skull drag somebody, that meant you drug them out there in front of everybody and you let everybody know what they done. And it involves some pain. Now, we can't put the physical pain to them or we'll be just as bad as the thugs, the Black Lives Matter and Antifa and all these other, you know, thugs. You know, I've sat and talked to some of these folks. Every Antifa member I've ever spoke to that's been out on the streets, they had hygiene problems worse than anybody I've ever seen. I'm just telling you the truth. Every single one, they opened their mouth, looked like they hadn't brushed their teeth. Well, probably in a long time. Their hair looks like you could run a grease rake through it. Their clothes smell like skunk, where they're smoking pot and everything else. And I don't care if you smoke pot, that's up to you. But, you know, when you go out in public and you're trying to make a political stance, maybe you ought to take a bath. Maybe you ought to brush your teeth. Maybe you ought to put on deodorant. Maybe, just maybe, you ought to change the oil in your hair before you go and try to talk to us about how you're going to change the world. Thunberg, whatever her name is, that girl that talks about climate change, went up there and just went on a rant. Bah! You know? God bless her. I hope she gets right one day, but I doubt she will because she got so much attention from these freaks over this. She's pushed this climate change thing, and they follow her around like a cult. You know, I'm just waiting for the day that we read the report where she carries them off to a place called, maybe she'll call it Greta Town, and then they'll start serving the Kool-Aid there. See, that's the kind of stuff that happens when you allow people, individuals. That goes for Republicans too, folks. Don't ever get too committed to a person. You be committed to your faith, your God, your country, Constitution, family. But never put all your faith in one political person. Because then you know what you're doing? You're worshiping. And that's wrong. So anyways, so Nancy Pelosi is saying that if you want to combat inflation, you want to do something about illegal immigration, if you want to make sure that only biological women and biological men perform in their own sports, that means women, too. I don't think that women should be allowed to participate in a men's-only sport. Same thing with women, men participating in a women's-only sport. That's why you have, you know, different classifications. You have your own thing. Go do your own thing. And be happy with it. But if you want to talk about the economy, you want to focus on combating what's going on with China, Russia. You want to improve our technology, health, energy independence to include coal, natural gas, and oil. God gave us those things for us to use, and we should use them, in my opinion, to be loyal to the country, to God and country. But if you say anything like this, you are a fascist. You know, no longer can you say the word patriot. Let me tell you something, friends. I'm an American patriot. I'm an American patriot. So much so that I will tell the left and the right when they're wrong. Because that's what real American patriots do. We don't get led around by our noses. You know, they put rings in pigs' and cows' noses so you can pull them around. So you can get a hold of them, see? And you can control that head and you control the rest. That's what's happening right now. But these people that are being controlled, that you don't even have to put a ring in their nose. They just blindly follow, blindly follow, blindly follow. Anything but decency, anything but spirituality, anything but Americanism, patriotism, they don't follow that. They got to follow some kooky thing that don't make no more sense than the man in the moon. But there it is. But if you talk about these things, you are a fascist. Well, I'm not a fascist. I'm an American. And I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I am an American. And when we get to the point to where we can start saying that and stop being worried about, well, did I hurt your feelings by saying God bless America or praying in the name of Jesus Christ? Because I do all the time. I'm not sorry. I'm not trying to hurt your feelings, but that's just the way that it is. I don't get upset when a Muslim prays. I don't get upset when the Jewish guy prays. I don't get upset when the Buddha prays. I'm glad they're praying, doing something decent, and talking about at least being kind and decent and civil to one another. I don't want to shut that down. The only ones they want to shut down is Christians. Like it or not, white Christians. Because there are some people that believe, not all, but there's a few out there. There's nothing you're going to do to change their mind. They want you to suffer simply because of your race. And that, racism. And anybody can be can have racism levied upon them. You don't have to just be black or Hispanic or American Indian. Ask my American Indian Hispanic friends and the friends that I got out there that will tell you the truth. They've seen plenty of white people, plenty of Asian people, plenty of Hindu people be discriminated against. Discrimination is when you hate somebody because of their belief or because of the way they look. And I don't hate people that are LGBTQ and all these other things that you got with them. I don't hate those people. I pray for those people. But you're not going to come in to my house and go to school and try to teach my kids that that's an acceptable practice because our faith says that it's not. Okay, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to hurt you. That doesn't mean that I'm going to go preach a message to condemn you. That just means please don't put us in a position. You go live your life the way you want to live it as long as your freedom doesn't interfere with mine. Because your freedom ends where mine begins. And mine ends where yours begins. Which essentially means keep your nose in your own business. And let people live the way they want to live. So what? You got two men living together. Two women living together. I don't care. I don't care. Care. As long as you're not coming over here telling me this is the way you've got to live or forcing a lifestyle on me that is not conducive to our Christian faith. If you don't do that, then fine. We'll be able to talk together, say hi together, go to parties together, talk to each other, live together with a civil harmony like we should. And I won't be trying to force my faith on you. But if you ever ask me, I'll tell you. And if I ever ask you, maybe you should tell me why that you do that. And maybe we'll have a better understanding if we can have a conversation. All right. We're just all fascists. If you're an American and a patriot, you're just a fascist. So let me get Rich and Father Michael on here because I tell you, just the killing of that 18-year-old boy was just, it's just set me off. You know what I mean? It's just because Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, none of those clowns have said nothing. They should have said, what an atrocious thing. We shouldn't kill each other just because we have a difference of opinion. No, their silence. Their silence is acceptance. That's what that is. When you're silent and when you walk by something that you know is wrong and you fail to correct it, you have accepted a lower standard for yourself And in their case, they've accepted it for their entire party, and they've shut everybody else up about it too. I say, God bless America. Go put that clown in jail where he belongs and prosecute him just like they're doing the January 6th people, because he ain't no better. As a matter of fact, he's worse, because he number one, they should kick him out of the Democrat Party just because he's driving an SUV, okay? Driving around in an SUV, talking about how he's going to be good to the environment, and he's committing the biggest crime in the Democrat Party. What is that group? The Squad. The Squad, they ought to flog him for that, but they won't, because he killed some Republican kid, and they consider him a hero. Just like they want to prop up George Floyd to be a hero. George Floyd should have never been killed, should have never been murdered. The guys got what they deserve that are going to jail for that. But nonetheless, he was a criminal, not a hero. Do not worship that man, because he did not do anything good in his life other than get killed. That's it. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How's it going?
I know, Father Mike, I know I went a little bit on the deep end here on this thing, but it's upsetting. It's very upsetting. It's just disappointing. So I'm a fascist now, I'm sure, amongst all my friends.
We've just ceased to be a civilization because we've lost our civility. It's heartbreaking.
Right. So you all have heard about this situation with this young man that was murdered by this stuff.
The hypocrisy of that man driving an SUV and supposedly being, you know, the cornerstone of, you know, of the Democrat Party, the party of
Green. Well, hold it. No, James, not look. Labeling the entire Democratic Party based on the progressives and the Green Movement, all right?
Right.
Not all the Democrats are progressives, right? The progressives, however, happen to be one of the large. It's actually the extreme fringes of both the left and the right that happen to be the loudest, and that's who get the attention. Okay, your Senator Manchin is a Democrat, but he's a moderate Democrat. Okay,
but he's not said anything either, Rich. That's the point that I'm making. They're not saying anything.
Well, let me tell you something, James. All right. In this country, you are innocent until proven guilty. Yeah, now all the evidence is there. This guy deliberately murdered that young man, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But he deserves the right to a fair trial, and he deserves the right to bail until then. Now, I'm going to tell you this. You left this part out. This guy is his claim, what I read, but keep in mind, if you go the mainstream media, it's always distorted. But I read something that said his alibi for why he should get off is because he has a job and a family and responsibility. He just took a man's life because he disagreed with him. Okay, but he's saying, you know, I got a life. I have a wife, kids, and a job and all this stuff. Yeah, but you took somebody's future away from them. All right, but he deserves the right to a fair trial. When he gets convicted, then he'll spend 5 years in jail. Okay, now, conversely, those people arrested for the January 6th, you know, coup attempt, they deserve their right to a fair trial and their right to bail also. Fair is fair. But what we're seeing and what you brought out is that there is an inequity in this fairness in the following of the Constitution, okay?
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Father Mike?
No, definitely. I mean, it's been a double standard. I've heard some say that if some people didn't have a double standard, they'd have no standard at all. And it's really disheartening to see the injustice, really to see things happening. And we all believe in mercy. We all believe in fairness, like Rich said, in a legitimate due process trial. But it's so blatant that there's favoritism. I talked to a newspaper person, and they told me that the liberal press is intentionally not pursuing anything about Hunter Biden. And, you know, we talked a great deal about polarization and some of the hard issues that we can't talk to other people about. And it was very civil, highly intellectual, and very respectful, with a lot of disagreement about a lot of issues. And see, this is what I'd like to see us do more, to have a representative, you know, that can maintain their military bearing and have a sense of dignity like we've had in the past, and to be able to talk to those people and see what they say, listen to them, and then share what we have to say, because we don't want to sing to the choir. And I'm sure there are many in our audience that may have different perspectives and different viewpoints. But I wish that we could, you know, in the public square, be more civil and really be able to have a classical and traditional argumentation, so we can come to some conclusions, so we can move the needle in some of these issues. And this conversation that I had with these gentlemen today, I felt very good about, because that seemed to be the outcome. And both of you gentlemen are highly intelligent, very well informed, and I think we can entertain a lot of people and come to some solutions. You and I both know true leader is a problem solver. Okay, we can recognize all the inequities, but we have to come with solutions and be reasonable and negotiate with one another. I'm teaching Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from the Birmingham jail right now to show my critical thinking students how important it is to have the right tone, to answer the questions head on, to be intelligent, and also respect your interlocutor. I just feel like, you know, these injustices, like I was able to bring out in this conversation today, Nancy Pelosi saying that the border is secure. And, you know, when we think about, you know, all the people that are dying and just so much havoc, we just have to be honest with each other. But I hear people, much like I read an article about Hitler on propaganda, people think just because they say it, you talked about Kool-Aid or groupthink, that everybody's supposed to believe it's true without fact-checking. No, I read something the other day from somebody I know that was in the military, and probably Rich knows the person too. And when I was in a green suit, they were working for the military. And they're given this information about Mr. Rogers and the Navy SEALs and all this stuff, and, you know, things you didn't think, things you didn't know. And so I did all the fact-checking. There's so much baloney and BS out there. We've got to comb through it, but we've got to talk to one another, so that, as even as God says in Isaiah, come, let us reason together. And it's all about emotion and hatred. We've got to start to be more reasonable and give good reasons for a superior position. You know, Dr. King won the day even over Malcolm X, who did a great deal for African-American men. I lived right outside of New York City during that time. However, Dr. King won the day because his arguments were more compelling. And I just pray that we could have dialogue and not just monologue. It breaks my heart, you know. And like I said, some people won't even approach an issue because they don't want to have to face the harsh reality. You heard this thing about a woman who's running for governor in Georgia, about the heartbeat in the fetus. And there were a lot of scientific people that gave scientific explanations. We can't even agree on brain waves, spinal cord, heartbeat, whether a fetus feels pain. It's because people have an agenda. They're not interested in the truth. And so if we could just, you know, get down to bare facts, hopefully we can solve some of the problems. Because I'll tell you, there's a great deficit in leadership. We don't have any leaders can solve problems on the current landscape. All they can do is point fingers and criticize. That's not leadership. A leader is a problem solver.
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you brought that up. The if you noticed, I mean, elections, campaigns, they're no longer about debates and facts. It is all theatrics, every bit of it. It is all theatrics, and it's disgusting, you know, and it's on both sides. So I'm calling out, you know, both sides on this. Now, with what we do at Vets for Vet Leadership, you know, now we have a few that get involved in that, but not much. They are all, every one of them that you see that have one thing in common, they're all asking for public debate with their opponent, thing that we are pushing. We want you to not go out and just make these ridiculous, you know, videos trashing. And, you know, they don't do a lot of that. They stay very focused on their mission. And I'm very proud of the group, that the small group that we are, that we've taken under our wing. But I'm very disappointed in the larger group that could be doing the same thing. And in particular, I'm very disappointed with some of the larger donors who are giving money to create the more theatrics that just, it doesn't work. America wants to see solid debate, or at least most Americans that I know anyways, maybe they don't, but most of them want to see, I want to know what you're really, when you say fix the economy, what does that look like to you? But that's what I like.
The money that's spent, gentlemen, to me is immoral. You know, to get their messages across and, you know, to debase and to slander the other person, it's called a straw man argument. It's a distortion, and then they pull it down rather than having a respect for one's opponent. And at least, you know, deliberating in a proper manner. And, you know, we've lost that kind of statesmanship. We really have. And that's why you have to have people not only that are competent, but have a level of character. Okay, not be a character, but have a level of character. You know, I don't see a lot of statesmen. I really don't. In our government, in business, we see, you know, a lot of corruption. Look, we're all sinners, okay? I'm the first to admit, like the Apostle Paul, I'm the chief of sinners. And you ask many times, we all have, why has God called me? Why has God chosen me? But nonetheless, I think there's got to be some more humility if we're supposed to be servant leaders. I just don't get that. There's so much hubris when you see deliberations in the Congress or whatever, and we just need better women and better men in government. We really do.
All right. Yeah, let me chime in on that. All right. So while the Democrats are talking about how, you know, let's go back to Biden's speech, and we had a good show. Yeah, Father Michael and I did a really good job of before anyone in the media was slamming, everybody was talking about it was the right speech at the right time, and Father Michael and I dissect Biden's speech at Philadelphia as exactly what it was, okay? It was definitely partisan, and he was basically trying to rally his base, okay? Now, while he's condemning, while he was condemning the MAGA GOP, his the Democrats, and this is widely known. Go on the internet, look it up. And the fact is that the Democrats were funding in the primaries, in the GOP primaries, they're funding the MAGA supporters, the Trump supporters. They're funding them because they believe they could beat them in a general election over the moderate GOP.
Right.
Okay. So that makes political sense if you're right. What I mean, if you're right, is if you can beat them. But you don't control the circumstances. Because here's the issue. Because the polls have now changed. And the three most important thing in the polls is economy, immigration, and crime. And
Amen.
The Republicans are seen as the best at solving that problem. And then again, so you're sitting there going like, all right, so you're the Democrat. You want to win. You want to win at the worst possible way. Okay, you will sell your soul to the devil to win.
Ooh.
So what you're going to do is fund the worst possible candidate in your mind. You're going to take money that you could, instead of telling how great your message is, you're going to take your campaign money and fund the people you fear the most, the MAGA Republicans, okay? Now, what you're ignoring is a historical fact. The Democrats always vote for Democrats, however that those numbers are sliding, and that's why Virginia became a red state in 1 year, okay? And the fact that in the off years, in the elections, whatever party controls the White House, the swing voters want, they don't want one party to control everything.
They want balance.
Whatever party controls the White House, they want the Congress and the Senate to control the other party to control the Congress and the Senate. That's historical fact. That's a historical fact. They want opposition. And in fact, the stock market loves this, okay? Because the only way anything can get done is in compromise. Now, most of the time, nothing gets done. But the fact is, swing voters want the opposite party of the White House to control the House and the Senate. But the Democrats are blind to that, and they think that this abortion issue is number one with everybody, and they're going to win. And what they've done is they have funded what they consider the extremists of the Republican Party. And based on history, and the fact is that polls are showing that the three most important things in America are the three things that the GOP works on. And folks, that now they're talking about, I mean, most economists were predicting we're going to be in the recession next year. They're already talking about it's already started. So, and the stock market is crashing. It is crashing, okay? It is now down to its lowest level in a year, okay? So while you're sitting there, beware of what you wish for. You want to run against the extremists of the Republican Party, what happens if you lose. Now, everything the Democrats are doing, the liberals are doing, injustice and all that, you know, you've got legal charges against the Trump organization in New York City, the DOJ, you know, they're trying to keep them from doing everything they're doing. Everything hints at how much they fear Donald Trump. They fear this man. He's a vampire. You can't kill him. That's the problem. No matter, you know, you listen to CNN or any MSNBC, this man is dead. Or New York Times, he's dead. There's no way he can write. And he rises again. He's a vampire. Okay. So you've funded, let's just look at this. So the Democratic Party has funded, it's fact, look it up, read it, go on the internet, look it up. The Democratic Party has funded very people Biden said we need to fear, the MAGA GOP. They funded those guys. And the circumstances have changed that the things the MAGA GOP is the most vocal on are the issues that are the most important in America. And so they're very likely to win in November.
Right.
And then we get a recession next year, like every economist is. I don't know any economist who's not predicting a recession next year. And we're going to go into the general election, and after everything the Democrats have taught you to fear about Trump, and the thing is, he fixed the economy, and that's the only thing that's important anymore, and Trump wins. We already done a show on that about the rise of dictators, and they're all, you know, they start out as a narcissist, they become paranoid, and that's when they become dictators. Yes, Donald Trump is now, before he was safe, he was what you'd call a good narcissist, but now we're looking at the bad narcissist, and what the Democrats are doing is setting the stage so that if he wins in 2024 because of the economy, because remember, back when Clinton was running, it's the economy, stupid, that they will have funded the people that will be that will control the House and possibly control the Senate that are so pro-Trump. We're in serious trouble. We are in serious trouble. It will be the Democrats who have funded that. That's the hypocrisy.
Well, the thing is that you're going to see, you see a shift to that. You see a lot of Republicans are jumping off the Trump train right now. You know, that's...
James, I'm going to tell you this. No, all right. No, they're not jumping off the Trump train. All right.
Other than
Liz Cheney.
Lindsey Graham.
Bullshit, James. Lindsey Graham. I'm going to tell you right now. This is the smart thing about the GOP.
I'm going to have to prove you wrong.
They know because the Democratic Party was split. It was dividing between the progressives and the moderates. When Trump won, yes, Lindsey Graham was anti-Trump, but he is on board with Trump. He was against him at one time. All of them.
Are you ready?
Wait, hold. Let me tell you something. They know that the Republican Party has to be united to stay strong. So go ahead and tell me what you're about to say.
Yeah. So nearly half of Republicans don't want Trump as president. That's a recent poll that just came out
All right, all right. James, hold it.
Hold
no,
up.
No, I'm in agreement. I don't want him as a president. I don't want to see him run. But I'm going to tell you right now, if he runs, the GOP is going to line up behind him. Just because they don't want him to run doesn't mean they're not going to line up behind him. If you watch the pattern of the GOP, they are solid. So what Biden was trying to do in Philadelphia was divide. He's trying to unite the progressives of his party with the moderates through their one common thing, their hatred or fear of Trump. And what he's trying to do is divide the Republican Party between the MAGA extremists and the moderate Republicans. But that, you know, they stood up and basically go, no, we're one party. So you have now attacked all of us. And a poll came out, 58% of Americans. If you listen to the news, it was like everybody was in agreement. Biden said the right thing at the right time. No, he didn't. He was further.
Yeah.
He had realized he had lost the swing voters. He was only focusing on rallying his party. James, yes, there's a lot of us. I will tell you right now, I do not want Trump to run in 2024.
Yeah.
I fear a dictatorship, but I will not vote for a Democrat because they want to take us down the road of a one part of a socialist government with a one party system. So which one do you want? All right.
Neither.
It's one form of a dictatorship of a party like a communist
Neither.
Government or a dictatorship like Trump. But I'll tell you this much,
well,
he's not trying to take the guns away from anybody. And as long as he doesn't abuse those guys, no one's going to take his ass out.
Well, here's what I'm telling you. That
Go ahead.
You watch the news because I watch it every day.
James, I do. Tell me something in the news I don't know.
I just told you that,
I told you, Lindsey Graham and everybody else, me included, do not want Trump to run in 2024. But I'm telling you, if he runs, the entire GOP party will line up behind him. That's the pattern.
Yeah.
And we saw that in 2016.
Here's what I'm telling you. Is that there's a heck of a lot more that are elected in office right now
right.
and that are running for office right now, especially those that are running. They have come out and said, you know, and what, let me tell you what did it, is when Trump made the statement that as the president, I can just think about, you know, declassifying these documents and I can do that. There's no
problem. You know what, James?
Can...
All right. James, let me tell you.
Well, that's what was said.
No,
don't get mad at me.
Let me ask you as a voter.
Yeah.
Do you care more about the classification of documents or how much it costs to buy food? When all of a sudden,
I don't see that I have to choose between the two because both of them are important
James,
and wrong.
James, I'm going to tell you right now. You know, my wife is telling me, called us, that we just zeroed out our checking account. And she's like, what the hell happened? What has happened? We haven't changed our lifestyle. The prices have gone up.
Well, sure.
So I'm going to ask you, James. So when you're getting to the point, you now have to figure out, like, okay, what am I, in my normal spending habits, going
we
to have
to
give
have
up?
To do it. We already
right.
have done
so
it. My wife had to go back
so
to work.
You're
going to
sit there and
is.
Tell me that people are now looking at what they're going to buy for groceries, and they're going to be more concerned about Trump taking classified documents, which we've already covered that. Okay, let me tell you. We've already covered that in the show, and that is the evidence is really like Trump didn't deliberately take that stuff. What happened was, you're disagreeing with me? Are you going
to
disagree with me on this?
Rich, he should have not had him in his house, period.
No,
end of statement.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm telling you why they were there, and he didn't know they were there. Because this guy doesn't read anything. That's a pattern. He doesn't like reading. And people give him briefings, and they come in there with these classified documents, and he's like, oh, I'll read it later. He has those short attention spans. He reads articles. He listens to the news. So they're trying to brief him this stuff. He says, give me that, give me that. And what happens is his aides take all that stuff, and they dump it in a box. And so he takes that on flight, hoping he might read it. He doesn't read it. Okay, so these boxes of stuff. And here's you know what the real clue is? So yeah, of course, the FBI is going to pull out the highly classified documents and lay them out. But you know what else was in those boxes? Newspaper clippings. Stuff that had nothing to do with nothing, which supports the idea that these are boxes of reading material that he was taking on flights. And nobody, when he came back, sorted, pulled the classified stuff out. So after he gives up the president, he takes all those boxes home with him. He doesn't know what's in them.
Yeah.
That's my take on it. Okay? And I'll tell you right now, you want to know why the FBI, let's just remove politics from it. You know why the FBI, their official statement of why they did not charge Hillary Clinton mishandling of classified material?
Well, yeah.
Because one thing, they said they could not prove intent. No, it was a fact. She mishandled the same level of classified material that Trump did. But
they're
the
all
FBI
wrong.
Said prove intent. And I'm telling you right now, the evidence is Trump probably had no clue that there was still, he was cooperating. He was cooperating. But he had so many boxes of stuff, he probably had no clue there was still boxes of classified material there.
I don't doubt that. Well, maybe not. I don't know. But here's what I'll say. They both
all right,
are
all right.
Wrong.
Wait. James, you know what I just created? Doubt. I just created you doubt. And in a court of law, you have to remove all reasonable doubt.
Well,
based on what you said, Trump will get off.
Well, I don't care if he gets off or not. Hey, look, here's the deal. In the end, you know, Trump and Hillary Clinton, they're well in. You know, they're getting up there in their years. You know, I mean, they're not going to live forever. People need to understand you're hitching your wagon, you know, to the wrong truck. You know, they need to hitch their wagon to just being an American, being
but
a patriot,
no right
and doing the right
anymore.
Thing.
James, there is no right truck out there. Pick a top Democrat or Republican you think is a right truck. There isn't any. Anyway, we're running out of time. You want to talk about my book?
Yeah, let's do that. But the name you need to check out on some of the candidates was a retired general named Bolduc in New Hampshire, and Lindsey Graham and several others have come out. And I'm telling you, I see the movement. They're trying to distance themselves because I think that they know that something is going to happen with this.
Of course, they're being political. They're being political. They're hedging their bets. But I will tell you, nothing happens. They're going to be cozying up to Trump, just like Carol Miller.
I know. We see her all the time. I mean, I can tell you, we see them all the time. But anyways, so speaking of good, honorable men, because they were all men, so boy, America surely could use some of the Rough Riders in this day and age right now. And as I think about the book that you wrote, We Were the Rough Riders, you know, I want to discuss this book, Rich, because I find it very intriguing and interesting whenever you can open up a book and you feel like you're there. you actually see the little stories and you can actually place yourself in these different scenarios.
All right, I want to thank you. And Father Michael said the same thing. You just nailed my writing ability right there. The goal that I had, I've visited most of the places I'm writing about except Cuba. But I wanted to put you there. When you read it, you feel like you're there. You feel like you're standing there. You feel like you're next to those guys. Tell me how I did it.
Well, Rich, I have a little advantage because some 20 years ago when you started reading it, I had the honor of, like you did with my dissertation, of reading it. And I know that you've added a lot of maturity has taken place, but I think I would be so blessed as a person who had anyone involved in that. Rich, you had so much inclusion, so many names, so many places, so many specific things that made it so interesting, just intricate things that are so important when you tell a story. And I just think you know how to tell a story.
I want to add this. Yes, I did, but they all served, almost all of them served in the same two companies. So what you have is multiple AIM events. So you have overlap. That is rare in writing a history. Go ahead.
Footnotes. Though, when you juxtapose different versions of people's report, that as an academic, you had a lot of credibility with me. Now, I know you mentioned to me that other people have done that. I so appreciated that because we have to be detectives sometimes. We have to make judgment calls. What's most compelling? But I just felt like it wasn't just a fun book. It was something that was deeply substantiated and, you know, had such a root in the history and in the facts and in the libraries and, of course, the pictures that added to it and even, you know, looking at the references really was a work that I know took you many, many years. I know you weren't doing it, you know, full time all that time. But it's a very, very solid piece of history, and I thank you. I appreciated it.
All right, so let's talk about. Here it is. You have an opportunity to ask the author questions about the book.
Okay.
Things you read that intrigued you.
How come there's so many references to Colonel Wood and later Brigadier General?
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, tell me his significance other than his leadership, because we've talked about.
Well, actually, the problem is Wood and wrote. All right. The book was not originally written about those two guys.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't tell their story without telling the story of the commanding officer and his second in command. And Roosevelt, because of his own personality character, just dominates that regiment. That's why there's so many references to him. The story is not told from their perspective. Roosevelt wrote his own book, okay?
Right.
But the thing is, those two guys influenced the lives of the soldiers so much that I was referencing them almost every day. But there is a difference, right, where the other books are talking about Roosevelt, primarily Roosevelt and what he's doing. I'm talking about Roosevelt in respect to the men who served under him.
Yeah, and I mean, you were really very adept because, I mean, I always look for leadership. I know enough about his life, and I look at leadership habits. And how one relates with people, not just mimic it, because some has to do with personality. But it was very helpful because of the specificity and understanding the dynamics of leadership and courage, things of that nature.
All right, Father Michael, you're not talking to Ivy League graduates. You're talking to the common man. What intrigued you about Roosevelt? All right. See, Roosevelt a born leader, or did he learn to become a leader?
I think he learned by a lot of what he went through in life.
Tell me about how he transformed. If there's any one character that transformed in my book, it's Roosevelt. Tell me how he transformed.
I think he was teachable and had a level of humility, was willing to learn. I mean, the whole thing with all of the
I don't think he had humility. This guy walks into a room and sucks the oxygen out of it, okay?
Yeah,
he wants
that.
To be the center of the stage. But when you describe humility, you're describing it not in a way that the rest of us may understand it. When we think humility, we're someone who's going to be humble. There was something
very
special about
it. He comes from a high level, and he's able to...
Right.
You know, and just like humility, but wouldn't you say there was a
you're onto something because you and I have had that conversation about the Ivy Leaguers and the millionaires.
Right.
To be a great leader, you told me this. To be a great leader, you first have to be
a servant.
That's right. And that's so when in our conversations, we talked about those. Sons of millionaires, the Ivy League athletes, the millionaires who enlisted as privates. And that's because you're a Harvard and Yale graduate, and many of these Ivy Leaguers came from Harvard, Yale, and Princeton. The ones I wrote about who ended up in the Oklahoma company came from Harvard and Yale, primarily Harvard, if I'm not mistaken, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what did that mean to you?
Well,
to be a great leader, you need to be a servant.
That's right. I mean, Jesus showed us that, right? Coming from heaven, becoming an infant.
Right.
I was very impressed. And, you know, I kept asking myself, how come that type of valor is missing today? I was so impressed by the specificity and the stories that you told, and I got to know the characters. You know, you developed the characters.
Mention one. No, mention one.
Well, of course, the chaplain would be the most important to me.
Yeah. All right. Look, I'm going to tell you, for the listening audience, the book was originally supposed to be about the men from the Oklahoma and the Indian Territory. And there was two of those troops actually went to Cuba, right? And they did very, very well, all right? But you can't – everybody hated the adjutant, Lieutenant Hall, okay? If there's one lieutenant – and he's a West Pointer. Okay, I think there was like three West Pointers in this regiment. So if you want the one West Point asshole everybody hates, you got Lieutenant Hall. And I did not pull any punches on that guy, okay? Now, and he's funny all the way till the end, where he challenges Richard Harding Davis to a duel. I mean, that's hilarious. Okay, but then of course they recruit, Madsen, who is one of the legendary deputy marshals of the Indian Territory, cleaned up the Indian Territory during its wild days, and they recruit him as their regimental quartermaster sergeant, okay? And then he asked me about Chaplain Brown. I'm like, after I started writing about that, this book is now not just primarily about the men from D Troop and L Troop, but it's also the regimental staff. Okay, so thank you for that.
You know, I just.
But was there a, was there a, when you talk about enlisted man, was there a one of the Ivy Leaguers or the millionaires that stood out to you? Because there's one that stands out to me.
I was astonished, Rich, that you could give us so much information on so many people. And I was impressed, like I said, with the valor, the courage. And I kept asking myself, how come that doesn't exist today, that people are willing to make that kind of sacrifice and want to be, even after the incident, they still want to serve? Like, what about their fiber? What about what made them, their character, would make them, you know? And I don't think they were just trying to impress one another and follow one another. It seems like something was instilled in them. And, of course, even though they finally met Roosevelt, didn't know really who he was for the most part, and certainly had an impact on them afterwards. But it just impresses me that we had that kind of humanity. You know, I'm not saying they were perfect and they weren't sinners and, you know, they didn't do different things, but it just amazed me that there was such a clarion call and people responded so wholeheartedly, and the sacrifices that were made.
The way you're describing it, you're looking from the perspective of the privileged class.
Yes.
Now, when you look at those who grew up, not grew up, because most of them immigrated to Oklahoma, the first chapter, really, my focus was to describe the nature of the men that were going to make up this regiment. What kind of people went to Oklahoma? There wasn't a state at that time. There was no one born and raised in Oklahoma or the Indian Territory to become a Rough Rider. What constituted those men?
I mean, their character, their drive.
Yeah.
I mean, some people even, you know, did unbelievable things just to be a part. We would even say deceitful or dishonest things. I'm just so impacted by that.
All right. Let me point this out. There were two land runs. Okay. So when Lincoln becomes the president, he does two things that I consider very significant besides the Civil War. One is he signs the Homestead Act. Before the Homestead Act, you had to buy the land you were going to settle. In the Homestead Act, you had 5 years that you could occupy, I think it's 80 acres, either 40 acres or 80 acres. You got 5 years that you can claim 40 or 80 acres of unclaimed government land. You don't have to pay for it. And if in that period you meet these requirements, that land is yours and you can start acquiring more land. That's the Homestead Act. That changes everything. Okay? The other thing he did was that he allowed any enlisted man who shows potential to apply for a direct commission. James, that's how you got to be an officer. Thank you, President Lincoln. Okay? And that is why all of a sudden we've got all these guys rising, enlisting in the Army as privates and rising up to become general officers. Okay. So when I wrote about the Oklahomans and those in the Indian Territory, what I was trying to describe is the caliber of men who were willing to risk everything for a claim of land or a piece of property. They were adventurers. And they were not finished after they had staked their claim. So when all of a sudden there is a war that breaks out, these guys, you've got this state full of people. You had two land runs. In other words, when I talk about the Homestead Act, they already knew. All right, there was the Depression. All right, there was the Depression of 93 or whatever. And they're like, okay, like the federal, the Fed tries to raise, that's what they're trying to do, to reduce inflation, they're raising the interest rate. How they did it back in 1893, have a land run. Let's have a race. We we know there's more people who want land, free land, homestead land, than there's actual available land. So we're going to have a race. They're going to be winners
Rich,
and losers.
Can I just compare those?
Go ahead. Go ahead. I want to hear more of what you have to say.
Vietnam veteran question. When I came in, there were guys drafted in the Army. I had friends in the Marine Corps. And then you had the 9/11 response.
Right.
I mean, totally different, you know? And I saw what gripped me, and you're giving it more clarity now, what gripped me is motivation, not just selfish motivation, but you always talk about having a sense, I guess, of honor or to be bludgeoned.
Right.
Or to, you know what I'm saying? And I just sensed something that was real. And I think if I had an ancestor in that group,
I'm telling you, for almost all the people that I wrote about, I knew why they enlisted. They wrote why they enlisted. Everybody had their own motivation, and it wasn't the same.
Right.
Okay? I read this one article written by a guy, and I loved it. And the way he described it was, because if you had political aspirations post-Civil War, if you had not served in the Civil War, so you grew up, everybody in political office was a Civil War vet, regardless of what side you served on. It was almost an understood fact that you could not get elected to any kind of office, public office, unless you were a veteran of the Civil War. So now you got a generation growing up. They grew of age after the Civil War. So they go in. Look at how many of those guys had served in the National Guard, all right, as enlisted men and officers because of that idea that it would translate to public office. All right?
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
One guy wrote an article, and I loved it, because he was criticizing it, that the Spanish-American War was a small war, didn't reap the same benefits as the Civil War. And he pointed out you could not get elected to public office without having served in the Civil War, and they expected the same results from this.
Could I ask you a question, though?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
How many of them, because I guess the impression I came away with, were motivated for honor? I'm not just talking about to be honored, because it was honorable.
No.
I would say, no, I wouldn't say honor. The closest one I would say to that, the most idealistic man in this book is Roy Cashin. You know, he was a valedictorian for his high school. Let's say, 14, 24 guys graduate from his high school class. Okay. But, and he was tracking the Cuba struggle. He gave a speech about Cuba Libre. This was the most idealistic guy. So there's no – and he was 17 when he enlisted. He had to have his parents' permission to enlist in the Army. He was 17. He was the youngest. He was the youngest Rough Rider from Oklahoma. Okay, I want to betray what happens to him, but it's very sad. Okay, but for the most of the guys, I'm going to tell you right now, they all enlisted for those who had any political aspirations. They enlisted for that. The vast majority of them enlisted for adventure, because they grew up in a generation where you've got this large generation. They had fathers and uncles who had served in the Civil War. I'm telling you,
Rich, let me just say, how do you answer that some of them stayed on to serve and did other great things? Was this the platform?
I'm going to ask you, because you're the reader.
Okay.
I wrote it out there. You tell me why, though, in particular, the Ivy Leaguers, the privileged class.
Did they get bit with something and realize that it was more satisfying than, you know,
yes,
just this privileged life? I mean, we all
they
serve.
Got the butt.
We all
I mean, yeah. You and I have served. Look, you served the Bugle. You went into the Navy during the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
Now, God called you back, and you didn't hesitate to come back to serve in the Army as a chaplain during another war. Okay?
Right.
And I can't tell you how many Vietnam vets, you have this nagging sensation after you've been downrange that you think, I have more to offer, because you've already been there.
Right.
Right? And that's, I understand these guys who, because I begin the chapter with Lieutenant Colonel O.G. Palmer, commander of a machine gun battalion in France, and he's contemplating all the guys from his company, D Troop, who are colonels who are serving on active duty in the unit. And that's just one troop. And then you get I'm going to tell you right now, none of the other authors have covered that because, all right, and what happened was I was giving lectures when I was writing this over 20 years ago in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I would get called to give lectures to all these little social organizations, the Lions Club and all these other groups. And I would do it, okay? But I would gauge the interest level, and I would listen to the questions. What I found was from the people, from the citizens of Oklahoma, they didn't care about what these guys did more, which is what I was interested in. They were really interested in who they were before the war and what happened to them after. And I followed that. And that's why I was surprised at how many of those guys, if they were still alive, when the Bugle called again, they were, you know, you're talking the millionaire CEO of B.F. Goodrich Company giving up his position to go back in to the Army as a lieutenant colonel.
I took a major pay drop. I'm not trying to compare myself with them, but honestly, because I felt a sense of patriotism. My father was 100% disabled vet, and I felt an obligation, a moral obligation. I took a major pay drop. You know, it was funny because my wife was asking, what are we going to make? But I want to ask two things, and I hope we'll be able to pick this up next time. Two concepts. The whole order out of chaos and the logistic issues. I found that fascinating, Rich. I found
explain what you mean.
Well, you know, there's a lot of chaos, you know, when they're deployed.
All right, especially Tampa. All right, yes, you're right. All right.
Yes. Yes.
Now, you got to understand, when I was still writing this thing, I was the Transportation Corps historian, and chaos at Tampa becomes a rallying cry for the Transportation Corps. When you talk about the confusion at the port of embarkation in the port of debarkation, which is Daiquiri and Siboney. And the rallying cry for the Transportation Corps after that is no more Port of Tampa. So, yes, I have to describe, look, when the way I write is you go from macro to micro. So, yes, I write a lot about the personal experience. And I was lucky because for D-Troop, there were so many first-person accounts. They overlapped. Because, you know, I'm reading one guy's diary or journal, and he talks about, you know, going over here and doing this, meeting this guy. And I've got his journal, and he's telling me what he's doing. That's really rare.
That was fascinating.
It was. It was. I mean, the last one I added to it,
Rich,
was the guy
the
who ate. Go ahead.
And the evolution, the assimilation and the evolution and what we would call formation.
Yeah.
To see where they were and how they become a unit. And even, of course, when they're there on San Juan Hill.
Yeah.
But it was just fascinating evolution. But the specificity added so much reality to it. You know, there are the boring times and
the
there
details.
Are exciting
yeah.
times.
Oh, look, I'm going to tell you the yeah. difference. All right. So most of the books out there on the Rough Riders are written by eyewitnesses. There's only four books that I know of
mm-hmm.
of the Rough Riders that are written by historians. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Two of us wore the uniform.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Turner wrote Arizona Rough Riders. Now, if you read all four books, you can definitely tell a difference in our perspective. Because
right.
when we're writing about a battle organization, what formation they're using, who's on
mm-hmm.
the left, who's on the right, who's up front, who's in the rear. Yeah.
Yeah.
That, for a person who's worn the uniform, that's how we look at things. Turner did a good job. Okay. But I was lucky because I'm going to tell you right now, there was a lot more first-person accounts from D Troop than there was from the Arizona troops.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, Rich, that's why I said to you, I think it needs to be a movie because it makes it so real. And you
yeah,
know,
it is.
Military
I can
person,
tell you. Yeah,
as a military
again,
person, we
you,
get upset
I wrote,
when we see
yeah.
these movies that are incorrect. You know, whether it's
yeah.
tactically
yeah.
or logistically. And it was so refreshing in that regard that the author knows, you know, maybe not that kind of warfare. The author
well,
understands
I'm going to tell you, I'll tell you,
and
even Charles Turner wrote, and Charles Turner wrote, missed this. And then
mm-hmm.
definitely the other two authors did. They're rumors. See, when I'm reading their letters, anybody who has worn the uniform knows the danger of rumor control. Rumors
mm-hmm.
flow through a unit, and
yep.
everybody and speculates on the worst-case scenario.
And about deployment?
That's right. And the thing is, I was reading their letters they were writing home. And in their letters, you see their fears. And they're writing home about the rumors. None of the other authors wrote about the rumors or the emotion. I mean, seeing when Roosevelt and Wood get the order to finally leave Texas and move to Florida, whoever wrote it described it like they were like kids. They hugged each other. They were so excited. And the thing is, the biggest fear, the rumors that are floating is they're going to get left behind. That's their biggest fear.
Yeah. And that's
they write home. They're going to be get left behind. They're going to get left behind. The 5th Cavalry picks up and leaves. They're going to get left behind. So finally,
yeah.
when you get to that, we've got the order to go, when Roosevelt and Wood read that order in front of the regiment. And then they're like two kids hugging each other. They're so excited. These guys describe that in their letters.
That's not rational. That's what I'm after. Okay? It's
yeah.
not rational. And so some kind of esprit de corps thing
yeah.
was instilled
yeah.
in them. And I appreciate everything you've already mentioned. I have a question that I want to answer. And
go
you
ahead.
Can probably answer them at the time. But have any of their relatives contacted you?
I contacted them. I contacted them. There was only a few left alive. That was a hard thing. I got to
uh-huh.
talk to the daughter of Ira Hill, and
mm-hmm.
I got to talk to the – I physically drove out to meet the daughter of Ira Hill, and I got to talk to Wetmore's son. So, yes, wow. I had the privilege of talking. The thing was, they did not know. I had the letters written by these guys. So I got to what I really learned from them is what happened to their parents after the war. And I was able to provide them letters written by their parents, or the stories written by, or letters written about their parents during the war. So, James, we haven't heard from you. James, please speak up. What questions do you have about? Talk to the author.
No. I mean, it's you know, we've had private conversations about it. I mean, I'm just fascinated with the details on the lives. And then, of course, for me, I'm always fascinated with the guys that never stopped chasing the excitement. You know, the Rough Riders that ended up in the trenches of World War One.
Right.
Was pretty fascinating.
Oh, hell, one of them went into the gold rush in the Yukon after the war. He was a serious adrenaline junkie. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. He retires in California. You're right. Okay.
So, you know, I mean, it's like, and most of them, like you said, they had a great, I mean, they had money, they had, you know, they had everything essentially that you could want. But there was just something that didn't feed that adrenaline. And I think some of them live with that the rest of their life, you know.
All right. I'm going to tell you
All
right. Go
Rich,
ahead.
I just want to say, I still think there's an element of honor. Both of you men are honorable by your
I think that's the icing on the cake. I think the underlying. Okay. I'll tell you many of the, like Hamilton Fish, you're talking about a number of those, the wealthy, the privileged class, whose parents had served in wars. There was this obligation to measure up to what their parentage had. Like Hamilton Fish, I think his grandfather was the first to discover the North Pole or something like that. I mean, you're talking about some of these guys, and like, they've got some big footsteps. They have shoes they have got to fill, and they feel this obligation. But you also see indications they're tremendous athletes, that they're adrenaline junkies.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I pray for the souls of those given us of an example of what it means to make a sacrifice, irrespective of their ultimate motivation, of which only God knows. And Rich, we're so proud of you, and we think it's a monumental book that's going to have a very, very, very long impact for many, many years.
I'm going to tell you right now. No, I'm going to disagree with you with a caveat. Okay, it's not going to be a bestseller, all right? But if
maybe not
West
now.
Point, yeah, I had a copy sent to the West Point History Department. If and what they'll do is they'll say, hey, we got this book, so anyone want to read it? And one of the professors there is going to read it, and going, damn, this is a good book. I think this is a really good study in leadership. Mm-hmm. If West Point, my alma mater, decides this is a really good, that we need to make this thing required reading in order to teach leadership, then I have accomplished what I set out to do. Otherwise, it's a good read. It's a good read. It's an entertaining read.
Yeah. Well,
okay, guys, we got a minute left.
Mm-hmm.
Hate to say that, but we've only got a minute and a half left. Father Michael, will you close us out in prayer?
Yes, I will. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen. Lord, we just thank you that you have a purpose and a plan for our lives. And we just thank you for what you did in being near these people who made great sacrifices. Help us, Lord, to be all that we can be. Bless James and Rich and all of our listeners. We pray, Lord, that we will be a positive force, especially those that are running for office, Lord God, that are standing for your standard. I ask and pray these things in Jesus' name, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Hey, friends and everyone, thank you for listening to us tonight on Continue Mission. I think we had a, you know, we got a little bit deeper into the politics. It was just kind of passionate, but the book is a great book, folks. Go on to Amazon.com and order it. It's called We Were the Rough Riders, written by Richard Kilblaine. You'll love it. You'll love it. You'll love it. And guess what, folks? Our show's coming to an end, and let us bid you good night. God bless you, and have a great weekend. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.